Well, and so Revolt Night is dawning upon us here on Friday at NAMM, and I got one more interview lined up with you. This guy's got really cool little spiked up mohawk dude going on right now. I love it. He's a punk rock drummer. He's worked with a lot of bands, including Head PE, Doyle, and of course TSOL. And we're going to find out just what makes a punk rock drummer that punk. So please help me welcome Anthony Tiny. And how do you pronounce your last?
Buso. Just flows off your lips, don't it?
Yeah, Buso. It does flow off the lips. How are you doing today, Tiny?
I'm good, my brother. How are you, Brandon?
I am doing really well. I am exhausted, I'm not going to lie. My first day here. But it's been an exciting day for me. I got to meet so many people, got to see great products, and saw as many bass guitars that I want to buy down the line. So,
Wish list. Wish list for everyone here.
Yeah, and I found myself a guitar strap that I'm going to buy myself.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So, first question, obviously, is what possessed you to become a punk drummer, let alone go into the punk rock scene?
Well, early on, I was playing all kinds of instruments and just percussively striking them. So the instructors just little by little, you know, the viola instructor was like, this guy's probably more of a drummer. And then the piano player, the instructor was probably like, this guy's probably more of a drummer. But they didn't really want drummers in the music program. They had an overrun drum department. So it was like, yeah, everybody wants to play freaking drums. And I didn't play drums in school until probably like the seventh, eighth grade until junior high. And yeah, man, you know what? It just struck me at an early age that you could do something really simply and get music. Like, just, you know, it's really just two moves. Drumming's like this and that. It's just like your foot and your hand come down together, then your two hands come down together, and then you're off to the races.
And you create this rhythmic ocean.
And you're going to create everything just from that. So guitar was always too confusing. You know, the fingers and the stretching and everything like that was like, what? I still to this day cannot play guitar. Play a little bit of bass. But yeah, the drums were just hammering and percussive and easy, and it was always there for me. Like, even I started drumming when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old, but I really didn't play until I was like 10 or 11 when they got me a kit. But yeah, there you go.
Well, there you go. And you got a list of bands that you've played with that I've listed off. What I want to know is, I've heard the name TSOL. I have never listened to them. I'm not going to lie. I'm new to it. But what does TSOL stand for? Does it just stand for TSOL?
It stands for The Sound Man Is Only Late, or Truly Sad Old Losers, or Totally Shit Out of Luck. Or no, it actually means, and these are all jokes that we said while I was in the band, of course, but it means True Sounds of Liberty. And the band was started in 1979 by some friends in Huntington Beach, and the band was started with the theft of a whole room of musical instruments from a church. So they stole all their musical instruments and they learned how to play them on their own. So the trippy thing about TSOL is, if you listen to this stuff, the guitar playing is very odd. A lot of guitar players will come up to us after gigs, would come up and say, dude, what? I mean, everybody from Mike Ness to Dexter from The Offspring, Noodles, all these different, like, really rad punk rock players would just be, you know, Fletcher. What the hell are you playing? How do you play that? What is going on? And then he would show them, and it would be a chord that was chorded wrong.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, this guy taught himself how to play guitar, and he put his pinky on the wrong note at the end. So, and that's on the album. So everyone's like, why does this sound like two guitars? Why does this sound so insane? Why is this so heavy? Why is it so thick? Because the guy didn't know what he was doing, and he made his own way of playing. It's really interesting. But yeah, TSOL, you know, very, very cult classic punk rock band. All through the 80s, they were revered as, you know, one of the most dangerous bands in Southern California. The joke was that I went to a fight, and a TSOL show broke out.
Ooh. Tell me who won the fight.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, just punk rockers going crazy and flying off the walls. So, yeah.
Oh, just when I thought Motley Crue was the most dangerous band in the world. I guess you guys precursed them.
A lot of this was before my time. I mean, I joined the band in 2003. So these guys were Rough and Tumblers and Hard Chargers way early in the game. While I was in, like grade school, basically, they had started the band. So, But yeah, I would definitely say that the TSOL guys would not be able to stand a second in a fight with the guys from, I mean, the Motley Crue guys would not be able to stand a second with the fucking TSOL guys. That goes without saying. But yeah, these are all like just ex-cons, jailbirds, just badasses that just throw down and play punk rock. You know, it's dangerous. That's what they did.
Sounds dangerous for sure.
And then there's me like, hi, yeah, like I learned all your songs. Am I good? Yeah.
Well, then there you go. And you've been with Head PE and Doyle. I mean, you've been around the world with a lot of incredible punk rock musicians. What would you say would be your most... Can you remember your absolute favorite show that you played with any group that you played with? Can you remember?
If I can remember the favorite show, but I don't remember that kind of stuff really. It's weird. I just remember the locations. I know that I really liked Prague a lot. Really liked playing in Prague. Some of these shows, man, they just kind of blend into each other. You know, they're not these humongous gigs that other people have where you can say, man, when I played Monsters of Rock or when I played Epicenter, I don't do those gigs. A lot of my stuff is just like dirt merchant punk rock clubs, you know, getting out there doing 50 shows in 60 days in Europe, and like three of them were festivals.
Uh-huh.
You know, the rest of them were like, fucking get your gear in, get on stage and play. And they kind of all blend into each other that way because they're just so quick and so fast, furious of a pace.
It's like one show piled on top of another.
Exactly. And they're all this, it's all like the same square building and the same black speakers on the wall. But yeah, you know, 35 countries and 48 states later, I talk about Prague being my favorite city and my favorite stop. I've been there like three times on tour. And it's just always really cool and different, and it's raining or dark and cold, and it's great.
It's amazing that a lot of the fans of punk rock and metal come from Europe more than they come from here. So I guess you were kind of reveling in all the screams and shouts, and they're like, oh yeah, TSOL or Doyle or Head.
Well, the thing is that over there in Europe, fans are a lot more dedicated, and they're a lot less likely to worry about what people are thinking of them and how they're perceived. So there's a broader fan base to punk rock and heavy metal and stuff like that, because people aren't just going, oh, I only like this type of thing, or I only like Satyricon and you know, and I'm on a Marth. You know, it's like somebody out there can actually like Prodigy at Satyricon, and then like, you know, I don't know, like Drake, who knows? So it's funny, like when I go to Europe, there's always that thing that I go, yeah, man, I wish we had that kind of sensibility and mentality in America. Where it's just like, hey man, it's art. They're just doing it. People, yeah. There's a lot of places to see shows in Europe too.
Yeah, unfortunately, we live in a society in this country where they're simple-minded and narrow-minded at the same time.
Yeah, and it's really all about like a little bit too focused on the big business and that kind of stuff.
And not enough on the art.
Yeah, just playing art, just getting together and having a place where people can come play music and not charge everybody $20 at the door. Yeah.
And when I ran into you today, right before our interview, you were actually interviewing some people at the Sabian drum booth, because you were doing something for drumline.com, right?
Drumline.net is a drummer-based website that features tons of interviews and videos and live event coverage from all over the world. And myself and Mike St. John keep that going. And curate all the videos and do all the editing. And I probably have about 250, 260 interviews on there.
Wow. So who did you interview like today? Can you remember like who?
Today I was interviewing some local friends. I also interviewed Mark Love, who's like one of the senior sound specialists over at Sabian. I forget now that you're... I interviewed a bunch of people. I'm just like running by my buddies that I know, or some dude. I'm like, yes, I can get some footage here. All right, boom, I can do a thing with this guy. Yeah.
I know how you feel. I mean, I have to interview some people too, but I'm learning into so many people that I know, my buddies and my musician friends. And I'm like, oh, I want to go say hi to them. But I'm like, I got to do my thing first, you know?
Yeah, well, I have a protocol here. If I see you often, if I've seen you two or three times in a year, I'm not going to say even hello to you at the NAMM show. I'm going to be like, yep.
Okay, good seeing you.
I see that guy out. I see him on the scene.
Yep. Yeah, if you've seen him like, yeah, way, like way more times, like, you're like, okay,
like,
he's in there.
Like,
you know
it. Whoop, later. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
All right, we got time for a couple more questions. You got some projects coming up, according to your lovely girlfriend, Jennifer,
right,
who is a friend of mine and a tremendous pain in the butt.
Oh, she's the best.
Yeah, okay, I guess you could say that. but what can you tell us of what you got down the pipeline this year?
Dude, I've been concentrating on this studio that I have in North Hollywood called The Boom Room.
Oh, cool.
And it's a rehearsal recording facility, production facility. Got all kinds of bands coming in there. Artist development, helping people find gigs, helping people get sponsors. And also have a great jam in there called The Jam Nation. And it's a really amazing group of people who play all improv. There's no covers. And we support the singer, and we try to just listen and write tunes on the fly and just do a bunch of improv.
That has got to be an amazing thing. I got to come to one of these jam sessions if I can invite myself.
It's a lot of fun, yeah.
Because I'm a bass player and I like to play every now and then.
Well, this Monday night we'll be at the Universal Bar and Grill.
I think I'll try to see if I can head on down. Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, my last question, and this is a big one. I always ask my guests this. Yeah. So he'll tell me if he'll let me know if I'm going to like you down the line.
Okay.
So you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. Who did you prefer growing up, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
I preferred the Beatles.
That is actually a very left-field question. I think a lot of punk rockers would go for the Stones. Why the Beatles?
I like the Beatles. I like their attention to sound. I like their eclecticness. I like their variety. I mean, you could say the Stones had that as well, but I think the Beatles were just kind of like four sort of seemingly, although they weren't, we know they're complex people, but they were four seemingly simple guys from small towns and working class people who got together and really made incredible music. And if you think about it, it's like 4 years, 400 songs, 300, it's like, it's crazy how long they had and how much they did in the time and the span that they had.
Yeah.
And they weren't like too like gaudy, and like, I like their mod look, and yeah, that's probably why I like it. I like the fucking suits.
Yeah. I mean, hey, don't get me wrong. I like the Beatles, too. I like their later stuff a lot more because it got experimental. It was trippy, but I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom was more of a fan of the earlier stuff, and I'm like, I can understand that.
Right.
But I was obviously a bigger fan of the Stones because I love the edginess, the blues that they put out, and the ability to combine blues with R&B, reggae,
sure,
jazz, pop. They were able to do that stuff before anybody else could.
Yeah. Hey, you know, different strokes for different folks. I mean, music is a thing that is an ingredient, you know, just like a cake. You put a bunch of different ingredients in and you get a different cake. So your cake is different than my cake.
Exactly.
And that's cool.
And plus, on a side note, my grandfather, who's a pastor today, he actually opened up for the Stones back in the
60s. Oh, well, there you go. That's why.
Yeah. And when we get to know each other a little better, I'd like to tell you the story of what he told me of what it was like to actually play in front of those guys.
That's right.
It involves a hot summer day, three shows, and very stinky, sweaty clothes.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
Believe it. Well, we will save that for another
time.
Tiny, it was so great talking to you.
We'll talk about Swamp Ass in the next interview.
Well, why not? I'm glad that your girlfriend Jennifer told us to get together. It was great to get to know you a little better. And just let me know when you got another gig down the line. I would love to come and see you play, man.
You got it, Brandon. Thank you, homie.
Yeah, no problem, homie. You join the rest of NAMM.
Swoop!